And I was just speaking to a couple of people before, and they sort of had no idea what I meant when I said that. So I'll just very, very quickly explain that there's four main schools within Tibetan Buddhism, of which the most renowned would probably be the Gelugpa, because of the Dalai Lama and his wonderful teachings throughout the centuries, but also because of the political influence of the Gelugpa school. But there's three other major ones: the Nyingmapa, that's been around a couple of hundred years longer than the other three. Then the other three, well, the roots that turned into schools, including the Gelugpa, all kicked off around about 1100, 1200, as teaching moved north from northern India and into Tibet. And they're the Nyingmapa school, the Sakyapa school, and the Karmakarju. And the Karmakarju is headed by the Karmapa, which I'm sure some people have heard of. And so he's a reincarnated Tulku in very much the same way as is the Dalai Lama. So going on from Ajahn Brahm's kind of multi-yana kind of approach, I guess my main teacher, I've had several, but he's been the main one. He died about 3 years ago. Really embodies that approach in his life of having studied the Theravada and Mahayana and Vajrayana schools. So I teach a little of all three, and probably mainly Vajrayana, but certainly all three. So that's a word or two about my background. And I've come here tonight to talk about the Chinrezi meditation. Now, I've been to this centre and heard Ajahn Brahm teaching on a couple of occasions, and I've heard him elsewhere too, like the Buddhist conference recently and also a festival down south. But I've actually got no idea what you know and don't know. So can I just get an indication? How many people have heard of or has any familiarity at all with Chinrezi? Well, we've got about three, that's good. The Dalai Lama, thanks very much. The Dalai Lama is said to be an incarnation of Chinrezi. It's the Tibetan expression of the principle of compassion. Now, as I'm sure everyone here is very aware, that's one of the Brahma Vihara, so it's the second one, Karuna. And the meditation today is going to be mainly on the Karuna aspect of the Brahma Vihara, but very much dependent on the metta of the Brahma Vihara also. And I hope that'll become apparent during the practice. So the different schools, really, I mean, there's many, many ways to look at it, and of course the teachings are vast, so how could you possibly encapsulate some of the differences in a few minutes. So whatever I say is going to be just one little line through a few of the issues so that we can just have some kind of context to put this Chinrezi meditation into. So the different schools have grown up in response to different cultural and personal needs. So they've all been developed by ordinary people like you and me to meet the challenges of pursuing the path of Buddhism in a serious and committed way. So the one thing that we could say about the Vajrayana school, which is the Tibetan schools, but also the Chan school in China and Zen in Japan, but I'm just talking really about the Tibetan side of things here, is that we all have Buddha nature, that's common to all the schools of Buddhism, where we have obscurations because most of us don't go around being really aware of that in any immediate sense. So there's something covering over this awareness. We all have Buddha nature. Right now, in each of our hearts, is a wide open space that's deeply connected with all of life everywhere, with everybody in this room and everybody everywhere else also. But most of us spend only little glimmerings of our time being aware of that. And so we need ways to, first of all, recognize those glimmerings as something valuable, because so many of us just see something that just feels good or feels a bit more open, and then we carry straight on and do the really important stuff of getting to work or feeding the kids or whatever it is that's on our mind that day. And we don't really, we need a way to bring it more into the open and more into our actual lives. This awareness, the possibility of this awareness. but then the actuality, like the experience of it, deepening. So one of the ways that the Vajrayana does part of this work is to bring the obscurations themselves into the path, to bring the actual ways in which our minds get confused and just twisted up around difficult experiences early in our lives or trauma through any time of our lives, and our social conditioning and cultural conditioning and so on. It brings those very things which cloud us into the path. Now, I'm sure all the other schools have different ways of doing exactly the same thing, because that's what we're challenged with, is how to live with this crazy reality that's called the human existence, where we are both Buddha nature and at the same time capable of invading and domestic violence and ignorance and all the rest of it that is only too obvious. So Chenrezig is one way to actively, first of all, foster this principle of metta, because without metta we're not going to do a realistic job of recognizing those very hindrances which cloud our minds. Now, the more we struggle with our experience to either get more of something we like or push something away that we dislike, this of course is common to all the yanas, I'm sure you'd be familiar with this teaching, the more we actually push and pull our moment by moment experience through attraction and rejection and then confusion of not really knowing whether to push or pull, the more we don't actually see what it is that we're pushing and pulling against. We're just working on our reaction to it. Something that we might call our reactive patterns just kick in, and then they're all in full flight, and there we are. Not really seeing what's going on, just either not liking this or really liking that, and being pulled and pushed this way and that way, and forgetting that it's actually us that's doing the pulling and the pushing. So we need a way to learn how to see this stuff more clearly, rather than simply catch it when the big reactions just happened and there we go, we're in full flight, and then the other person or the other culture or the other country or whatever it is, the other gender, the other age group is just busy reacting to us, and then we're reacting to that and they're reacting to that, and people forget how it all started. With metta, it's, as I'm sure many of you are aware, it's a way to simplify our awareness through practicing just being simple and open with whatever is happening, whether it's in a meditation practice, whether it's a pain in our knee or a shimmering feeling of energy up our back or a great emotion or a great vision for the future, whatever's happening, just to allow that into our consciousness with a friendliness and openness, this loving kindness quality called metta. And through doing that, we actually stand a chance of seeing what's there, instead of just our projections on it, our worries and resistances and predilections about that situation. So we need that as first up, because otherwise if we go straight into compassion, we're going to be busy getting in there, sorting things out, we think, with great intentions, wonderful intentions, heartfelt, wonderful, truly good intentions sometimes, but without any real chance of engaging with the situation, because we're not actually engaging with the situation, we're engaging with our likes and dislikes and projections and fears and hopes and worries about the whole thing. Metta is a very direct way to cut through all those things, and it's the basis from which a meaningful compassion can then follow. And by meaningful compassion, first of all, I mean a compassion that's connected with the situation rather than simply connected with our projections onto the situation, our fears and hopes and what our neighbours think and all the rest. Then we need a way to exercise compassion. Now, there are many, many methods, but we need skillful methods, because if they're too theoretical, if they're not grounded enough, then they're just going to stay in our nice religious communities or whatever it is, and we're going to talk about it and feel okay about it then. But when the actual situation comes up, you know, that evening or the next morning at work or wherever it is, on the news and when we vote and everything else, like in the real situations of our life, when it comes up, we just get thrown around again. So we need a way to make an intervention, like an actual intervention, not a wishful, hopeful, just grasping at the possibility that we might be able to really make a difference to what is creating suffering, both in our lives and others, but some direct methods. Now, there are many, 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 and all the schools have so many of them, of course. The Chinrezi meditation, Chinrezi is a Tibetan word, and it's the same meditation. Some of you just might know the Sanskrit name Avalokiteshvara. It's exactly the same meditation. It's a visualization practice, and we use visualization and mantra. Now, I know some of you will be familiar with those practices, but I also gather from speaking to just a couple of people on the way in that a lot of you won't as well. So, why would we use mantra? I'm sure you're familiar with chanting, and just it just gives a good feeling. Or it can, if you're just entering into a chant, you're just using your body and your voice and your breath and so on, and it can be a meditation in itself. Mantra obviously works on that level. It's also a very subtle teaching and learning in that the same process that creates the discursive thought that keeps the attention going, I'm no good, or she's no good, or if only I'd done that, and if only he'd done that, and so on, then I would be happy. That sort of process where one thought just goes around and around and knocks onto another one and makes another one, that process seems to be quite innately human. I think we're all probably really, really good at that, would be my guess. Anyone know what I mean? Couple. Be true to yourselves. I think we're all there probably 90% of our time. Certainly a serious amount of our time. Mantra is a way to enter into that cycling of discursive thought with a way to turn it, with a way to put in some thoughts and like some principles more than thoughts, but it's using that same thinking mode. But the principles go deeper than thinking, but we have to start there because that's where our attention is. Remember, we talked about Vajrayana brings in that which clouds us actually into the path. Mantra is a way of just slipping into that discursive thought process some sometimes simple but very deep and deepening principles that can actually turn that whole process and open it up so that we can then come into a deeper reality, a depth mind or whatever we're going to call it, on our way to developing more familiarity with this Buddha mind that's present in all of us. So I don't want to sort of get too theoretical about all this, so I'll try and keep it quite short. But mantra is also, so it's useful in meditation to turn that thinking process around, but it's also, and this is where it really comes alive, as long as it's based on meditation practice, it's also a way to turn that discursive thinking, projecting mind around during the day, like whether it's at work or whether it's in a difficult situation with a friend or whatever, where the actual reactive patterns, the ways in which we cloud ourselves from an experience of Buddha mind in our own hearts, moment by moment, the ways that we do that, when we notice that that's going on, or when we even think, perhaps, here we go again, you can just put the mantra in, and it's a way of, you can carry on at work, you can carry on at the meeting, you can carry on looking after the kids, whatever it is, you can carry on just walking to the next office, whatever you're doing, but you can also be carrying this direct, that there's something about having that sound that is embedded in the meditation practice can come into the daily life and bring real benefits with it too. Visualization, why do we do that? Because the depth mind, by which I mean the mind that is beyond the purely conceptual mind, the mind that's wrapped up with words and ideas, the mind that's beyond that doesn't use words or uses them very, very sparsely, but it does use images. So everyone's familiar with dreams and just how deep some of those images can resonate in our lives. So the depth mind is actually using a language that's visual. And so, again, the meditation practices around visualization are designed to create doorways, I suppose you could say, into those inner experiences by creating something in our minds. And because the creation, the setting up, has been done by awakened teachers, like very skillful beings whose really only reason for creating these things is to help people awaken. Because these have been well thought out and well tried and skillfully put together, they can just start up a resonance between what we have imagined and what actually already is within our experience. So there's a very short way of just explaining why we might be doing visualization practice. So the kinds of things we might visualize are lights in different parts of the body, or energy changes in different parts of the body, or holding certain symbols in our hands to express different principles of consciousness. So Jinrei-zi has four arms, or he has different versions, but the most common one, and the one we'll be doing tonight, has four arms. The first two are held in a prayer mudra, so it could either be prayer or a budding lotus. And in the middle of that is a deep blue jewel, like a space blue radiant gem, called a wish-fulfilling jewel. And it's designed to open up a radiant, spacious feeling in the heart. And from that, we can go deeper and deeper into, well, eventually shunyata and Buddha nature. He has two other arms, and I'm saying he because in this particular expression it is a he, but the same principle is expressed as Kuan Yin in the Chinese traditions, and as many of you will know, she's often depicted holding a child. It's the same, or it's two different aspects of the same meditation. So we're saying he this time, but it's not a rigidly gender-specific thing. In the right hand is a crystal mala or rosary, and each bead is a moment of consciousness. It's crystal, so it's twinkling and radiant. The mala is in a figure of eight pattern, Sorry, I'm not drawing that very well. There we go. Symbolizing infinity, so it's unending stream of moments and moments and moments of clarifying and clarifying and eventually of radiance. It also symbolizes an unbroken thread of awakening hearts through every being. So this Buddha mind is present in each of our hearts right now, and it's present everywhere, but our doorways into it, a lot of beings experience the heart as being a way into that, can be opened up with this meditation. The second left hand holds a lotus, and this lotus is flowering out of the mud of samsara, the actual ways in which we delude ourselves, the actual suffering, the actual emotional states that you and me and everybody that we know gets into, not theoretically, but our actual life experience of suffering. From that flowers a purity or just a deep, deep openness. And from this openness comes the radiance of the moment-by-moment consciousness and the radiance of shunyata or dharmakaya, opening from our hearts. So, ready to do some meditation? I just maybe could add that first of all, this work's going to be a little bit unfamiliar to most people, and really just take the parts of it that resonate with you, and just let go that which doesn't seem helpful, because there will be quite a lot that you're not familiar with. But just enter into it the best you can, and you'll find that some things do come alive for you. Now, visualizing Chinrezi, some people ask, is Chinrezi really real? Because I'm visualizing this being now, and here I am, and I'm real, and is Chinrezi real? Well, the one way that this meditation works is an expression of the awakened mind that's already present, and the ways in which we put our identities together is not as real as we'd like to think. So just put a question mark above both your own reality as a permanent ongoing entity and Chinrezi as well, and then the two will come together just fine. So let's begin with the meditation. So just find your meditation posture. Just let the spine grow a little long. Let the front of the body grow a little soft. If you are sitting in a chair, that's wonderful, but if unless you have a back situation, if you could just lean forward from the chair, it'll help any energy movement in the body just flow more freely. Just let the belly and the chest be soft. Just come into the fact, the very real fact, that each of us is now dwelling in a body. Sometimes our mental processes are strong, so we have to remind ourselves to feel the connection with the floor, the support of the floor. Feel the contact with the clothing. Feel the movement of the belly as the breath moves. Feel a sense of space inside your body and the space around your body. So we begin the practice turning the awareness within. concentrating on the essential emptiness of one's being, seeing the space rather than the molecules of form, from the top of the head to the soles of the feet. All feelings, sounds, thoughts are like the wind blowing in space, emptiness moving on emptiness. And we can repeat the mantra if we like, Om Swabhava Shuddha Sarva Dharma Swabhava Shuddha Om. Om Swabhava Shuddha Sarva Dhamma Swabhava Shuddha. Space in the body and the space around the body. Om Swabhava Shuddha Sarva Dhamma Swabhava Shuddha. From the emptiness, a shimmer of energy above one's head, above your head, forms into a lotus in full bloom. So you can just imagine any kind of flower radiating, opening, budding at the top of your head. It's radiant and beautiful. In the centre of this lotus there appears a moon disc, radiating moon-coloured light, soothing like the light of the full moon. Light swirls above the moon disc and forms into a Tibetan letter Hri. You can just imagine H-R-I-H, or you can simply imagine a dancing, shimmering figure of diamond clear light. Rainbow light, appearing white, radiates out from the Hri, this diamond of light above the flower, above the moon, above your head. Radiates out in all directions as an offering to all the Buddhas throughout time and space. The light returns, converging upon the Hri, this diamond radiance above your head, carrying with it the blessings of all the Buddhas, all the Bodhisattvas. Again, there is a pulsation of light moving out to all the universe, bathing all manifestation. When this light returns, all the seeds of karma, the desires for action, the seeds of karma are purified. All disease, all unwholesomeness, pain, and obscuration are empty, void of meaning, and oneself and all others are freed from suffering and established in happiness or well-being. And the Hri above your head dissolves into light, and this light coalesces or comes together into the form of four-armed Jinrezi, who is the essence of all refuge. Chinrezi sits in the cross-legged or Vajra position upon the white moon disc and the lotus. His body is radiant, the colour of newly fallen snow in bright sunlight, and rainbow light shines from him. Just keeping in mind, some people visualise very clearly and some people it's just the feeling of it is going to come through, so you can feel what it would be like to have white rainbow light, very clear, very empty above your head, like newly fallen snow in bright sunlight. Chinrezi is holding a jewel between two of his four hands, positioned at his heart center in an attitude of prayer. The second right hand is holding a crystal rosary, and the second left hand is holding the stem of a white lotus, the blossom of which is near his left ear. He is clothed with the finest of silk garments, evoking the feeling of calm and peace, that where the skin gets kind of a smooth texture to it. His garments embroidered in gold. His body is adorned with a superbly jeweled crown, beautiful earrings, necklaces, bracelets, anklets, symbolizing radiance opening up through the whole body as the energy body starts to open. And he has a belt with small tinkling bells hanging from it, and the golden brown skin of an antelope, symbolizing gentleness, drapes his left shoulder. Part of Chinrezi's hair is bound up into a knot on his head, while the rest falls freely over his shoulder. This evokes the idea of discipline and of spontaneity, both present. Above the crown of his head sits a small figure of the Buddha Amitabha, the Buddha of boundless light. Chinrezi's back is supported by a full moon. The three jewels, Om Ma Hong, which is Om is a white radiance at the forehead, Ah is a red radiance at the throat, and Hong is a deep space blue radiance or jewel at the heart. The three jewels, Om Ma Hong, reside in Chinrezi, and he emerges as the unity, the complete fusion of these three, plus all forms of refuge there might be throughout beginningless samsara. Chinrezi is looking with greatly compassionate eyes, smiling lovingly at me, at you, at all beings. This is the loving kindness that forms the basis for the compassion work that comes soon. He is always watching over each and every sentient being with a heart filled with loving kindness, immutable, unmovable in his care. Because Chinrezi is an expression of our own higher natures, we can pay respect to this visualization in any way that feels right to us. I'll start with a formal prayer, but then there'll be a way to just do that in your own way. Great compassionate victor, victor over ignorance, please hold us with your compassion. For the numberless beings who wander endlessly in samsara, experiencing unbearable suffering, there is no other refuge than you. Protector, please bestow the blessings to obtain omniscient Buddhahood. Now you can pray or contemplate or just open up a dialogue between yourself and this created being that's expressing your own depth nature, until you feel moved in the stream of your own being, keeping a sense of the presence of Chinrezig. Having prayed in this way, from the sacred body of the Most Compassionate One, there emanates a white rainbow light. This light comes from the whole body of Chinrezig and also from the Amitabha Buddha seated on his head. And the light is especially strong from Chinrezig's heart. As a strong, clear radiance evoked by your own sense of devotion and connection with this expression of your own higher nature. Immeasurable and inconceivable white light pours from the Chinrezig, pervading the entire universe, inner and outer, bathing and purifying all creatures and creation. The outer realms are purified. All the beauty, sights, sounds, smells and so on of joyous nature are there. The environment is purified by this radiance. This radiance of simply being in the presence of your own higher nature, expressing compassion to all life everywhere. And at this point we can begin to say the mantra, which most of you will know, is Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Mani is jewel, Padme is flower or flowering, Hum, Hum is heart. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, and you can just try it even if it's a bit unfamiliar. You can say it out loud or just quietly in your own way. Either way is fine. Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 Om Mani Padme Hum. Imagine that you're saying this mantra along with all sentient beings, and from the multitude of throats comes the sound like dronings of thousands of bees. Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 Om Mani Padme Hum. The white or rainbow light continues to pour forth from the Chinrezig. It enters the crown of our heads, as it is also entering the crowns of the heads of every sentient being everywhere, and washes through the body, permeating my entire being. Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 Om Mani Padme Hum. Imagine light entering through the crown of the head and gradually lightening, enlightening, enlivening the whole being, the parts of you that are already well and alive, and also the parts of you that might be stuck or not so well. Om mani padme hum, 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 om mani padme hum. As the light fills my being, all unwholesomeness resulting from body, speech and mind activity motivated by ignorance is made whole. Om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum. Just imagine this light filling your being as completely as you can. Everything that's either dark or heavy or poorly connected inside your being simply dissolves. You don't have to get rid of it. Just the light washes it through and dissolves. Opens, touches. Om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum. When the light has completely filled me and all sentient beings, I and all manifestation become inseparable from the body, speech and mind of the greatly compassionate Chinrezig. Om mani padme The form of the Chinrezig becomes even more clear and bright, shining yet empty like a rainbow. All manifestation, all of creation, becomes even more clear and bright, shining yet empty like a rainbow, both vitally present but also insubstantial, empty. Om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum. All manifestation is also a rainbow light, from the smallest particle to the vastness of heaven. Here there is no differentiation, no naming. All is jewel-like luminosity, so that outer, inner and Chinrezig become one. Om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum. With the removal of obscuration, which is what this bathing in light coming down from the crown of our heads has actually dissolved, the obscurations in our being, opening us up to the unity of all life everywhere, or at least showing us how to begin this work, how to deepen this work. With the removal of obscuration, there remains only rainbow clarity without contrivance, the innate nature is rainbow and clear. Form, sound and awareness become inseparable from emptiness. All sounds are the buzzing of the mantra of Chinrezig. Om mani padme hum, 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 om mani padme hum. Om mani padme hum, 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 om mani padme hum. Now we move into the work of compassion, undoing the hindrance patterns directly. in my heart center, in your heart center, there forms a six-petaled lotus, or any beautiful opening flower. In the center of this is a radiant white Hari syllable, this diamond dancing light syllable again. And on each of the petals there stands one syllable of the mantra, Om Ma Ni Pe Me Om. Om Ma Ni Pe Me Om, like a string of pearls around your heart. From the Om syllable shine forth innumerable Om syllables, which as white light shine forth from our hearts, spreading in all directions to purify and fill all manifestation everywhere with the white light of the perfection of mental stability. The light completely purifies all karmic propensities of pride, thus establishing the Buddha wisdom of equanimity. We repeat one rosary of the mantra, stressing the Om syllable, and visualizing the white light moving from our hearts to the realm of the gods, which is also ourselves and the people we interact with when they're caught in pride. Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 Om Mani Padme Hum. The sound to just give some energy to your visualization of white light radiating out from the heart and purifying, liberating, freeing up pride so that it becomes the Buddha wisdom of equanimity, upekkha. Syllable on the lotus in our hearts emanate innumerable Ma syllables, which as green light shine forth from the heart, spreading in all directions to purify and fill all manifestation everywhere with the green light of the perfection of patience. This light completely purifies all karmic propensities of envy. Thus establishing all accomplishing wisdom. When we cease to be envious of that which is desirable, we can actually set about the work of accomplishing it. Green light radiating from the heart is one way to remind us of this work and to deepen it. We repeat one rosary of the mantra, stressing the Ma syllable and visualizing green light moving from the heart to the realm of the Asuras, or all those beings caught in power struggles and having to defend and maintain their position, including ourselves. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Visualizing green light moving from the heart, touching all beings everywhere who are caught in jealousy and struggle. This green light touches that space in them and liberates it into all accomplishing wisdom. From the ni syllable at our hearts emanate innumerable ni syllables, which as yellow light shine forth from the heart, spreading in all directions to purify and fill all manifestation with the yellow light of the perfection of morality or sila. This light completely purifies all karmic propensities of doubt and desire, and the way these two feed each other, thus transforming samsara into nirvana through spontaneous non-clinging awareness. We repeat one rosary of the mantra, stressing the ni syllable and visualizing yellow light moving from our hearts to the realm of the humans. Doubt and desire. Desire causing doubt. From the pe syllable in the lotus in our hearts emanate innumerable pe syllables, which as sky blue light shines forth from our hearts, spreading in all directions to purify and fill all manifestation with the sky blue light of the perfection of diligence. It's consistent, caring effort towards ours and others' well-being. This light completely purifies all karmic propensities of ignorance, thus establishing the Buddha wisdom of Dharma Dhatu. Emptiness. We repeat one rosary of the mantra, stressing the pe syllable and visualizing sky blue light moving from our hearts to the realm of the animals and ourselves when we're caught in animal type consciousnesses. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Om Mani Padme. So you can just imagine this sky blue light, the light of a clear, open sky. encouraging, strengthening your own diligence and overcoming all ignorance with time. This consistent effort. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 You can try using the mantra and just see if it helps still the thoughts. For some of you it might. From the me syllable emanate innumerable me syllables, which as red light shine forth from the heart, spreading in all directions to purify and fill all manifestation with the red light of the perfection of generosity or dana. This light completely purifies all karmic propensities of attachment, thus establishing the Buddha wisdom of discrimination. When attachment is freed, we can actually see what's truly there. That's the Buddha wisdom of discrimination coming into being. We repeat one rosary of the mantra, stressing the me syllable, visualizing red light moving from our hearts to the realm of the pretas or hungry ghosts, and those aspects of our own being that are wandering here and there, searching for fulfillment, while actually being in the midst of plenty. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. So imagining red light shining forth from the heart, touching those parts in you caught in ongoing unfulfillment. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. And the key to this is to develop generosity, dana. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 From the Hong syllable emanate uncountable Hong syllables, which is blue black or space that's the blue light of deep open space in a clear night sky, shine forth from the heart, spreading in all directions to purify and fill all manifestation with the blue black light of the perfection of wisdom. This light completely purifies all karmic propensities of anger that grasps at duality, and thus establishes mirror-like wisdom, the realization that all beings are not unlike ourselves, are in fact deeply connected with ourselves. Repeat one rosary of the mantra, stressing the Hong syllable, and visualizing blue-black light or space-blue light moving from the heart to the realm of the hell beings and those aspects of life where we're caught in anger or violence. Om Mani Padme Hum. Six kinds of light return to the three syllable, this diamond, clear, dancing light in the heart, which shines with diamond white light from the centre of the lotus. As the light returns, it is absorbed into the three and is purified. So imagine those six colours coming back now and entering into the diamond light in your heart, it's radiant. Pure emptiness. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 We finish the rosary accompanied by this visualization and then stop saying the mantra. All the purified outer realms, the environment, has been purified by this realization of our own higher natures, dwelling in compassion. And now absorbed, the purified outer realms are now absorbed as light into the rainbow body of the Chinrezig above my head, above your head. Then Chinrezig is absorbed as light through the crown of my head, merging with me, merging with you. The Chinrezig that you've created above your head dissolves into your own being, and the two become inseparable. Moving towards Shunyata now, my body now dissolves, becoming light. This light is absorbed into the lotus and mantra in my heart. The six petals and the mantra are absorbed into the diamond, free light in the heart. So that's all that remains now, is this dancing diamond white light. This free begins to shrink and dissolve simultaneously. Until only a dot is left, this dot of very clear radiance. Then the dot dissolves. Just rest in the open play of consciousness. It's awareness without boundary and without center. And as we end this meditation, whatever reappears now is the face of Chinrezig. All manifestation is the body of Chinrezig. All sound is the sound of the six-syllable mantra. All activity of mind is the essential emptiness of Dharmakaya, or the play of spaciousness and openness in our hearts. It's Buddha nature. I will carry this thought with me throughout my daily life. This is the practice in the daily life. So now, considering the lack of clarity and confusion that still remains in our beings, we should consciously state the sharing of the wholesomeness of this practice with all sentient beings, with all life everywhere, and make a vow to ourselves in whatever way we wish that we will continue to work towards purity of knowledge and compassion for the sake of all beings. Through this merit, may we quickly achieve the realization of victorious Chinrezig, inspiring Chinrezig, that which can inspire us to overcome the hindrances and delusions of our own lives. And may I bring every being into that dimension of well-being. We'll just conclude the meditation for a minute by doing a brief review of the session. So bring to mind what happened for you, especially what happened in your body, the first foundation of mindfulness. What happened in your mind states as we progressed through the meditation together. This will help to integrate the meditation mind with the daily mind, the day-to-day mind that's about to come to the fore again. So just take a minute to do that in your own way. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So if you'd like to have a stretch or just move your body to get a bit of life back into your limbs, feel free to do that. If you need to just walk around a little bit, that's fine. So I'll throw it open to questions in just a minute, but to work with the deeper confusions and entanglements in the life, we need a method that can actually sustain us through that. And of course there's an abundance of methods. I mean, the Dharma is huge. This is one very useful way of tangibly recalling the urge to awaken, to bring light into the very centre of those things which most throw us, these emotional states of pride and envy and doubt and desire mixed up together, and just wanting to veg out a bit too much and hanging on to things and be looking for something to fulfill us out there and forgetting that actually the fulfillment's going to come from a meaningful engagement with our own hearts and connecting that with whatever activity that we're engaged in. Or, of course, hatred and ill will and everything that flows from those. So there's one way of looking at the range of emotions which really grab us and throw us around, and a way to work with them by bringing light into the center of that experience. We can actually, in time, if it's a method that we feel connected with, it will certainly help to begin to just ease out that which is most caught in us, and why these states get invoked again and again and again and again and again and again. And as you start to notice that, yes, I, this being here in this situation, has a particular pattern that might come into play, be it envy or ignorance or any of the ones we just talked about, you can say, there I go again. And it's quite easy to just say the mantra quietly to yourself and the relevant colour. Somehow it helps us to steady in the middle of the reaction pattern. Perhaps in time we won't react quite so fully, quite so deeply, or perhaps we might notice that we are reacting and not keep the thing spiralling out of control. So to be able to do that, we need to be able to notice what's going on. We need to be able to notice that we have reactive patterns, these karmic propensities, it says in the text. But all that means is those parts in ourselves which seem to, we're going along fine, and then something happens and there we go again. And along a little well-worn groove through our emotional lives that we recognise for ourselves quite well. We've all got our own little repertoire of these. It's probably only quite a small number, but they're there. And it's actually those deep down which are preventing us seeing the ways in which we're already liberated and already actually free, already totally engaged with all life everywhere, already creative, open beings, capable of finding well-being in our own lives, and capable of helping that to emerge in others as we go. So Chinrezig actually helps us to see the situation as it is. It's like all meditation, it gives us a basis of well-being, excuse me, and punya. And it's the punya that's actually going to help us meet these knotted parts of our lives, because without punya it's really just a vain hope. We need a way to actually get in there, not just hope that we might be able to one day. And then we need an actual method to start to unravel whatever it is that's tangled in our particular patterns, our own particular personal individual patterns of confusion. So I'll be very happy to take questions. Was that session a bit long? Quite a few people left, or half a dozen or so people left. I was just wondering if perhaps you're unused to having a session that long. How did you go? Was it about the right length? It's okay? Good. Okay, thanks. Any questions? I'm sure there's a few. Don't be shy. There's a lot of new information here. Yeah, thanks for raising your hand. You have to just stand up and call out. Yes, well, you've gone straight to something very deep. Oh, sorry, yes. The question was thoughts as a manifestation of emptiness. I guess the question is, are they a manifestation of emptiness, and in what way are they a manifestation of emptiness? Well, if Buddha nature is present in every moment, and if Buddha nature is everywhere, I'd like to suggest that both those things are true, then anything that happens is inherently connected with emptiness. and it's the Prajna Paramita Sutra of form is emptiness and emptiness is form. Then it goes through all the different skandhas, and emptiness is not inseparable from form, so that thoughts being a form is just a patterned way of, so something patterned is emerging. And actually, if we give our thoughts a lot of energy, then they have the power to do all kinds of things. But if we let them, as in absorption in meditation, simply arise and have their time and their play and then pass away, they emerge from emptiness and they go back to emptiness. Now, the suggestion in all this work is that emptiness is present no matter what's happening. So what we need is a method to tap into the fact. So to try and get out of it just being an abstract idea, emptiness being the fullness of love or unfoldment or awakening, or very, very deep and very integrated well-being, very deep connection with all of life everywhere. That's what's on the other side of emptiness, and in the relative reality, it's called empty because it's empty of some of the things that we're busy grabbing onto in the relative reality. Excuse me. But at heart, Buddha nature is there. So everything is a play of Buddha nature. You've gone straight for a very, very big issue. I don't know how far that helps. I hope it helps a little bit. The principle being, emptiness is present everywhere, whether we're in the middle of a rage reaction or an envy reaction or a pride reaction, and all the activities in the world that stem from those emotions. Right in the very middle of each of those moments is wisdom. It's the play of wisdom, but it's a confused play of wisdom. So we can purify it, we can simplify it, we can open it up, we can transform it. But we need punya, we need to consistently develop the power of meditation, and then we will be able to actually meet this, and then it becomes a play, as it always was. But until that's true in our lives, they seem to have a reality that's separate from wisdom, separate from emptiness. Nirvana and samsara can't be separated in this way of thinking. Each is deeply interwoven. So thanks for that question. If you'd like to follow up, please do. There's another one there. Yeah, stand up and really call out, because otherwise we won't hear you.
Wisdom and awareness of self-awareness, is that one and the same, in a sense? It's one, it seems to me one needs to be aware one is experiencing a particular emotion, be it jealousy, whatever. And then the wisdom to recognise that with the awareness, or is it one before the other?
I don't know if I can repeat that question very well. Wisdom and awareness, does...
Are they related? Is there a relationship there?
Are wisdom and awareness related? And if we're experiencing an emotion such as jealousy or whatever, where's the wisdom in that? Yeah? Well, wisdom's present anyway, and the question is, are we aware of it? It's present anyway because we're all Buddhas. Every single being in this room is a Buddha, but most of us are busy with some other preoccupation which stem from our habitual reactions to things. And we can go into the whole theory of the klesas and so on, but we're not going to do that this evening. But I think we all have an idea of what we're talking about, what I'm talking about. This preoccupation with our projections seems to be so real. But it can clarify any moment. just like a sky with storm clouds and so on might look absolutely solid and you think it's never going to end or something, but the sun's still shining behind all that. And we've all had the experience, I'm sure. We might not all be aware of ways to kind of focus on that experience and expand it, but we've all had the experience of something going on and then it could just clear. Like a very, very simple example would be, like, you could be sitting in meditation and you can have a really intense pain going on. And then it might be going on for days if you're in retreat, and then it's just gone. And nothing changed, nothing moved except the mind. The wisdom's present every moment. And what's the relationship between wisdom and awareness? Well, without awareness, you're going to continue, we are all going to continue to be subject to these conditioning patterns, some of them societal and cultural, and some of them personal, that shape our viewing, shape our desiring, and so that we're busy actually looking for those things in a situation. We can walk into a room and we're looking for that situation, that emotional matrix that we brought into the room. Without awareness, we're just going to be in the matrix. With awareness, we can begin the work of connecting our lives exactly as they are with wisdom, which is here, exactly as it is right now, but the two aren't in dialogue. Thank you. It's a good question. We have a little time left, so if anyone would like to ask something, please feel free. Yeah. Is emptiness the same as the no-self we talk about in Theravada, or is there more to it? I would be very hesitant to say everything there is about emptiness, because it's totality. But the door to it is the dissolution of self. So as the clinging to notions of the self begin to be more transparent, then we can begin to see through them. We can begin to see that which lies behind our preoccupation with ourself. And that if we weren't so busy nurturing and tending and worrying about this thing called me, a whole lot of other experience would come in. Is emptiness the same as no self? Well, no. The self becoming more transparent is a doorway to emptiness, and then emptiness is very, very, very large. So there's no point in talking about how large it is. It's a lot bigger than you and me, as we currently construct ourselves. Yeah? People are quite interested in emptiness, eh? Sorry? Oh, hi, yes, thanks.
I read a book about famous monk. He says that Kuan Yin or Elodis Debra or Chevezi is a sound, is like a universal sound, okay? So when you're in trouble, you call Kuan Yin, you know, and you come to help you, okay? So I was just thinking, like, in your visualization meditation, okay? Does it occur to you that it's something you're like tapping, it's like a telephone line, and we have a telephone line connected to the world, internet, or yeah. It's very powerful. Sometimes they tap this thing and you understand what I mean?
Yes, look, I do understand what you mean. You're asking some fantastic questions. You want me to repeat these questions? The gentleman at the back has read somewhere that Kuan Yin and Chinrezi is like a universal sound. I'm paraphrasing and condensing what you said a little bit, so we can clarify it if I'm a bit off the mark. Chinrezi and Kuan Yin is a universal sound, and is the meditation practice that we just did a way of opening up a telephone or an internet connection with this universal sound. Is that about it?
Yeah.
Fine.
And the person who directed the books was Master Swanapa, city of 10,000 Buddhas in USA, he was big, you know. In fact, the monk came for the fourth annual the world conference last year, and he said that Kuan Yin is a sound healer.
Hmm.
So this came to me, our open point, is it like they are tapping, you know, we pray to like, pray to God, you know, that's something connected to the align, you know.
Yeah.
You know, like energy, all these things. So it's like in your meditation, your body's visualization, your body coming in, all these things.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was thinking, my mom, to be honest, you know, some energy in the prison.
Yeah. So it's really the same thing. Is the meditation a way of connecting with this universal sound? And the answer is yes. That's the whole point. Is it a universal sound? Is it a universal person? Is it a universal principle? Is it a god? Is it a deity? Is it an archetype, to use a more psychological term? Probably. Yes to all those, but obviously we might have to qualify some things. Jinrezi is both a construction of our own, like it's a theatrical kind of technique. From our side currently, as we're living in relative reality, designed to open up, exactly as you just put it, a telephone line or an internet line or a tangible, actual connection that might be based on vibration. That's where the sound comes in, and that's where the mantra also helps. But the visualization and the mantra go together. To open up to a quality of the human mind. One expression of a very, very awake human mind is that it's compassionate. It wants to get involved in those very things that prevent us seeing clearly, those very things that entrap and ensnare and confuse us. It wants to get involved in that because it wants to open us up to that potential which is so clearly present in each of us. This meditation is a way. And you could think of it as sound, that's absolutely right. Other people might have another sense that they want to express it in that way, but the sound is a very clear way of expressing, like a resonance that's going to happen between the work that we're doing as individuals. We're setting up a resonance with a deeper principle that's actually beyond what we create. And the two are going to come into a kind of a dialogue through this resonance that we're setting up. How are we doing with your question?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for now. Yeah. And? But yeah, that's what we're doing. Little by little. I mean, you can't do something like this a couple of times and think that's it. But as a stream of this connection opening, gradually the boundaries of difference between me and this relative reality and this full expression of humanity awakening become either transparent or smoothed out. You could imagine this as like rocks in a stream or something, this stream of sound going backwards and forwards, opening up this communication, exactly as you say, this internet connection. Broadband.
Very
powerful. It is very powerful. I'm sorry?
It's very powerful, is it? Very powerful.
Well, it is very powerful, but it's very safe too. I mean, the mind opens up at its own pace. It's powerful in the sense that it's very, very deep, and there's no end to it. Because it's so deeply tuned in to a quality of radiant mind that's already part of our human experience. I actually didn't hear that. Do you want to just say that again, please?
So, did someone guide you? Someone who's got experience to guide you, a teacher?
Well, I think with this With any deep meditation work, a teacher is going to be of great help, because there are many cul-de-sacs and distractions and power trips and depressions and all kinds of things that can come into play as the sort of your more or less tried and tested ways of perceiving life start to get a little bit shaky or not quite so certain as they used to be. And a teacher can help spot the next step that's useful to you. We could finish soon, but if there's another question, I'll take that. Might be about right for now. Yes.
I'm very impressed with the Om.
Om. Internet.
Would you be kind enough to do it again? Thank you.
Well, it's really, I mean, you could get all kind of technical and probe it around in this way and that way, but it's really just a question of doing it. And this sound quality that the gentleman at the back was talking about, of connecting the principles, we just use the sound and it starts to work. It's more like suck it and see than understanding every nuance. But yeah. There are many, many different kind of resonant chambers in the body, like even just physically. I mean, actors get trained to use nasal resonance and chest resonance and so on to project their voice in different ways. But I think it goes a bit deeper than that. There are different energy levels in the being that can come in and out of focus through doing sound work. But let's just kind of be really simple about it. It's pleasurable. And if you connect with a kind of a sense of well-being that comes from this work, the vocal cords or other resonant chambers and things just open up of their own accord. We don't have to understand every aspect of it, but then someone else might want to see exactly what's happening. But it's a question of doing it, and through doing it, the voice just relaxes and the body opens and becomes resonant. It's the power of sound. It's very deep and subtle, very interesting way of working. Thanks for your interest and joy in it. Okay, is that enough for now? Well, look, thanks all very much. I know this work's been unfamiliar for a lot of you, so I do appreciate your patience and your care with it. So I'd just like to share the merit before we go. Idam te punyakama sawakya hung on to idam te punyakama sawakya hung on to idam te punyakama nasawakya hung on to. May any merit, which is the strength to transform ignorance into wisdom, may the merit generated by doing this wholesome activity together be shared forth now for the benefit of all life everywhere. May each of us speedily realize our own depth natures. Again, not for the sake of ourselves alone, but for the sake of all life. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.